such a scandal. Every place that I go, everyone that I know.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Here in the second hour, we're going to start out with Colleen Carroll Campbell. She says it's been a summer of scandals. We're going to talk about the outrage overload she thinks she's suffering. A lot of us are suffering it. She's written a column for today's St. Louis Post-Dispatch titled Outrage Overload Follows a Summer of Scandals. Our call-in number's 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Colleen Carroll Campbell is a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book, The New Faithful, Why Young Adults Are Embracing Christian Orthodoxy. Colleen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
You have written about our villain-obsessed media. Is this just Congress in recess? The news is slow, and it's a 24-hour news cycle, and they got to talk about somebody?
Well, I think that's somewhat true. It seems that every news story, no matter what it is, has the same breathless delivery from our anchor people, so that certainly contributes to it. But I think this is a trend that's been sort of building over the last few years, and I think the 24-hour cycle is kind of fueling it.
Okay, so paint the picture for us. How did you come to the point of what you call outrage overload?
Well, as this Senator Larry Craig scandal was unfolding last week, I just realized that I wasn't feeling quite as indignant as all the TV anchor people were sort of telling us we were about this, and it wasn't because I thought the behavior was acceptable. It's obviously not if it's true, and his guilty plea certainly suggests that the allegations very well may be true. But rather that after seeing mainstream media really go after and highlight the misdeeds of someone like Michael Vick, the constant in-and-out-of-jail shenanigans of Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan, Nicole Richie, Britney Spears, latest allegations of being a negligent mother, and so many others. We just get such an overload of fixating on whoever our villain of the week is and just really pundits on every channel, this person's picture and their whole list of crimes and offenses constantly before our eyes, and I just think it gets to a point where it really it's overdone, and in some ways it blurs so far into entertainment that it raises some other questions that are also raised by reality TV.
My teenage daughter, you know, these kids are plugged into pop culture. It's mainlining pop culture in a lot of ways for them, and there is a lot of weariness with the, I guess I could say, not so much the coverage, but with at least what she notices is a whole raft of people, Senator Craig not included in this case, who are famous for being famous.
Right.
And in the end, with that much attention, that much money, and that much time on their hands, eventually just become famous for getting in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that's true even, especially because of this explosion of reality television shows. You know, it began with Survivor, but now we've got a show for just about every vice you could have. We've got cops for your regular average criminals. We can watch them get caught. We've got cheaters if you want to see faithless lovers exposed. We've got To Catch a Predator if you want to see an online sex predator get caught in a sting. And in all of these cases, it seems to me that, the ostensible reason the media are putting forth these shows are, you know, to show us how we should not behave. You know, you should not molest children, you shouldn't cheat on your husband, that sort of thing, which, you know, I think we can all agree upon. But clearly, we're getting a lot of our entertainment, more and more these days, from watching other people fall, fail, embarrass themselves, shame themselves, do sordid things, and then be forced to make clumsy, embarrassing explanations. And I think that's kind of problematic that's now become almost our favorite form of entertainment.
You've written about CNN's Nancy Grace. I must say, all I've ever seen of Nancy Grace is the Saturday Night Live spoof of Nancy Grace, which I take it is pretty dead on in terms of kind of her more righteous indignation, moral outrage. How is that indicative of, or how is that spun off of what's going on here?
Well, I think Nancy Grace is a great example of it. I have missed the spoof, but I've seen the real thing enough times that I think any spoof would probably be justified if it depicts her as working herself into a fury constantly over just about anything. I think what struck me when I flip through the channels and pause on Nancy Grace is that no matter what night it is, no matter what scandal it is, no matter how large or small, how horrific or mundane, she is equally outraged. She is disgusted. She cannot believe these sorts of things happen and that there are vile creatures out there who commit these sort of crimes and on and on and on. What I don't think she's contributing is anything really new to our understanding of why people commit these crimes. It just seems as if she's getting her ratings by encouraging us to stand in judgment of the villain of the day. And these people are often, I mean, their deeds are pretty despicable, so it's not a tough sell. But it really, again, it's a lot of that berating people on air, screaming with outrage over every new offense, and really dwelling in the muck and mire of human nature.
Well, the greatest insight I pulled out of your column, Outrage Overload Follows a Summer of Scandals in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, was the irony. You write, it's odd that a pop culture allergic to moral absolutes has spawned such moralistic entertainment. I mean, these things are certainly wrong,
right,
but the media reaction as a reflection of culture is as odd as it could be.
It is, and that's why I that was sort of the seed for this column, as I was reflecting, why have we become so hyper judgmental, really, not to say that these deeds aren't wrong, but so fixated on judging and making sure people pay for their crimes, at the same time that we can't figure out which way is up on a lot of moral questions that our ancestors and even our grandparents thought were pretty clear-cut. And I think the two are related. I think as we lose our moorings in terms of moral absolutes, in terms of what is right and wrong, we become more eager to find a few blatant cases where we can all agree, oh, that's terrible. And of course, these are terrible deeds, but it kind of gives us a pass. Well, we might be fudging here, fudging there, ignoring this or that, you know, commandment, but hey, at least we're not as bad as that guy. And I don't think that's really doing a lot for us.
Okay, then in terms of the media treatment of this, and you're a media type person, is this, in your mind, yet another step down the slippery slope into, you know, 24-hour scandal television? I mean, the Scandal Channel is certainly not far ahead.
Absolutely.
Or is it just a fad that we're going through as a culture, and pretty soon we'll get back up on our feet and news will be news, and and we'll have a sense of what is newsworthy and what is just tabloid fair?
Well, unfortunately, it seems to me that the trend usually tends to be a downward spiral, and it's not usually us correcting ourselves until something really catastrophic happens where we kind of all agree that things have really crossed the line. Unfortunately, you hear almost every month, all right, this time we crossed the line, this time we're going to rein ourselves in. And, you know, as long as a lot of journalism and entertainment are driven by money, then I don't know that that is going to be self-correcting, and I think at the end of the day, it's going to have to be a disgust from the American people, a sense that finally we want to move on, we want better, we want more newsworthy stories, but when it comes to entertainment, we also want better entertainment. It doesn't have to be always uplifting, puffy stories. We just don't want to constantly wallow in other people's failings.
How is that going to happen with about a minute before we wrap this up? How is that going to happen? Is people have to stop turning off the televisions, or
that's the place to start? Obviously, cultivating a taste for better entertainment. You know, turning to books a little bit more when we just can't find anything, and also writing in to the sponsors of some of these shows that they've crossed the line, and we don't want to support them, and we want them to know that they're advertising on shows we refuse to watch.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book The New Faithful, Why Young Adults Are Embracing Christian Orthodoxy. And Colleen has written a column in today's St. Louis Post-Dispatch titled Outrage Overload Follows a Summer of Scandals. Thanks for being our guest, Colleen.
Thank you.
Never should be. For there won't be a scandal. Tell you, say you love me.
Well, for the next 20 minutes of this program, we're going to be talking about the commandment, you shall not kill. Seems pretty straightforward, doesn't it? You shall not kill. But what does kill mean? Does it cover soldiers? Does it cover cops on the street? Does it cover things like abortion? Pastor Kent Schaaf is our guest. He's pastor of All Saints Lutheran Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, and he made a presentation at a recent Higher Things Youth Conference titled Murder, Killing, and Bloodshed. Pastor Schaaf, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much, Todd. Good to be with you.
Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address this Thursday, September the 6th, issuesetc@kfuo.org. If you have questions or comments on that commandment, you shall not kill, and I know you do, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Is there a difference between murder, killing, and bloodshed?
Well, of course, I think we have to look at it and say, well, what is the intent behind all this? I mean, we certainly find killing in wars, which can be just or unjust. We certainly find killing happening with something like murder and even bloodshed. I found it interesting. I caught the last end of your last interview there. I believe it was with Colleen,
yes,
who was mentioning about particular shows. And this is something I kind of brought up with the students at Higher Things concerning how much murder, killing, bloodshed do they see on a daily basis, whether it be television, internet, video games that they play, articles that they read, and so forth. And sort of what you just said there, how do we decipher all of this?
So we have a seemingly straightforward commandment, you shall not kill. But apparently in Scripture, there is, I guess you could say neutrally, a loss of life that isn't murder. What is specifically forbidden by this commandment?
Well, obviously God says that he forbids us to take the life of a fellow man, which Catechism says is murder, or our own life. But even more so than just the idea of murdering somebody or taking the life of somebody, I love how both the small catechism and the large catechism of Luther expound that this is goes to the extent of even hurting or harming our neighbor in his body. But as he says, we need to help them, befriend them in every bodily need. So As I mentioned to the students, I asked them if anybody has ever killed anybody. And, of course, very few people raised their hands. And I kind of came back with an idea that, I have. And as we say in the liturgy of the service, that I have sinned against God in thought, word, and deed. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the actual pulling out of a gun or a knife and physically killing somebody. I mean, we can certainly kill somebody with our words. We can harm them with our words, and even in our own heart. You know, there's nothing good that comes out of our own heart, and that includes this idea of wishing nothing but harmful things, murderous things, for our neighbor.
Is it more than a metaphor, Pastor Schaaf? I know people will remember that old song, "Killing Me Softly." You know, the guitar player wasn't beating her over the head. He was singing a song, and the words were metaphorically killing her. But is when Jesus says to hate your brother in your heart is to be a murderer, is he speaking more than metaphorically?
I think he is. I think he talks about the idea that in Matthew 25, what it is that we are supposed to do for those around us, and in the catechism, the large catechism of Luther. Luther states very clearly, he says, you know, many of us may never actually commit murder, but we do call down curses, imprecations, and these other things upon those people around us. And he says, if they actually came true, it would soon put an end to the person. And he goes on to mention how the spirit of revenge clings to every one of us, and it is common. And that in the sight of God, that we should not use anything that is of us, anything around us, to harm our neighbor in any sort of way. That in the sight of God, you know, I think very much so. He says, yes, you might as well have killed this person. I always remember my father telling me growing up that if you can think it or you can say it, you certainly can do it. Just because I've not gone out and murdered my next door neighbor or the person that's in front of me in traffic doesn't mean that I haven't with my thoughts or my words when I'm frustrated, when I'm angry with them.
So is it safe to say we're all guilty?
Yes.
Of violating this commandment, you shall not kill?
Most certainly. Most certainly. But we like to think, as I talked with the students about this, we immediately think of the pilots on 911, or we think of the Cho Sung Hui's of this world, the real you know, kind of brutal people that we have seen in the press, in the news, and so forth around the world, that have done horrendous things, horrendous killings to other people, and those are horrific things that have happened. Those are things that stick out to us and stick in our mind. But I think we ought to be cautious when we look at somebody like that, like a Cho Sung Hui or somebody else, and turn to ourselves and say, well, you know, what is it that I have done against my neighbor? How is it that I have acted against my neighbor? Have I hurt them or harmed them in any sort of way, as the explanation in the Small Catechism says?
I'm thinking about what you're saying here, Pastor, and it's kind of painful, because if I think about that spirit of revenge you mentioned before, Luther mentions, mm-hmm. and the desire to avenge myself against my neighbor, whoever he may be, the grudges that I hold, the mm-hmm. animosity that I harbor and nurture against my neighbor, all of those kinds of things, even just the momentary flashes of anger and hatred, and we call it road rage now. I think Wilkin, by Jesus' standard, is a serial killer. He's a mass murderer.
Well, so is Schaff. And I think this is the thing that I really had no formal real formal presentation that I wanted to bring out with these students. I just wanted to discuss this idea that we see the ideas of what a mass murderer is in our society. We hear about things that happen with killings, with murders, with bloodshed and so forth. And how is it that maybe at times do we as Christians maybe think of ourselves as being exempt from this? Whereas in Romans 12, it says, dearly beloved, you know, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. You know, and we even got into discussion about war. And, well, if a soldier takes the life of another human being, is that considered going against the fifth commandment? And that's where we have to... We jumped into Romans 13 with where God uses, the arm of the government, the arm of even the military to protect and defend those around us. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm probably misquoting a little bit of Luther here, but I think somewhere he writes along the lines of, you know, that soldiers are somewhat exempt from this commandment when they're fulfilling their duty. But I'm not quite sure where that's found. I just remember being taught that growing up with this.
We'll talk about that here in just a moment. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address this Thursday, the 6th of September, as we talk with Pastor Kent Schaff, pastor of All Saints Lutheran Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, and author of a presentation made at a recent Higher Things Youth Conference titled Murder, Killing, and Bloodshed, The Commandment, You Shall Not Kill. Let's go to the phones and talk with Betty, who is waiting patiently on the line. Hi, Betty.
Hi. The psalmist in Psalm 139, cries out and he said, that thou would slay the wicked, O God. And then he says, do I not hate them that hate thee, O Lord? And he said, I hate them with perfect hatred. Is there such a thing as perfect hatred?
That's a great question, Betty. Thanks for bringing it to our attention. Pastor Schaff.
Well, I think there is a thing where we often hear in the scriptures about anger. And certainly we have this idea that a parent could be angry or upset with a child, who's disobeyed, a command that they've given to that child. But again, it's this idea that this is not ours to take. This is not ours to take into action with going against that. And I think as well also with some of these psalms that we find that, you know, these are David's lamentings, you know, of what's happened with him. And it's almost as if he is laying this on God that let him handle this. Let him take care of this. Let him bring this about accordingly to his will.
Anne is listening in Crestwood. Hi, Anne.
Hi, good afternoon. I had a pastor a few years ago who said that every time he got behind the wheel of a car, he turned into a monster. And the more I thought about that, I thought, my goodness, I mean, that's a situation in which we hate. Every time we get behind the wheel of a car, it's hard to drive along without feeling something, animosity towards those driving around you. So I had to admit at that point that I'm a murderer, too.
And thank you very much. Pastor Schaff.
Yeah, I tell my congregation all the time that if they truly want to see the sinful side of their pastor, and believe you me, I am a very sinful, wretched person, just ride with me in the car. This is why I wear my clerical collar every day that I'm in the office, because it's sort of that leash that's around me that says behave, especially when you're in the car. It's certainly true. There are these moments where we find ourselves kind of going in from a Jekyll to Hyde and vice versa. These things that really make us upset. And Luther again even goes on in the Large Catechism that he says that God wants us to keep this commandment in front of our eyes as a mirror to which we see ourselves, so that we may be attentive to his will and with hearty confidence and prayer commit to him whatever wrong we suffer. This idea that if somebody cuts me off in traffic or I've been offended by somebody, we certainly feel this anger, this animosity against somebody, but we're to place this before God. Let him handle this according to his will and not take the law into our own hands, take action against them.
Pastor Kent Schaff is our guest. When we come back from this break, we'll have about 10 more minutes with him talking about the first commandment. It's actually the fifth commandment, at least the way the historic church has been numbering it. You shall not kill. This break is a great time to call with your questions or your comments. It would seem so self-explanatory, but of course it isn't. And part of the reason it isn't, at least to us fallen creatures, is that we are always trying to find a way around this commandment. We're always looking for that loophole that will let us off the hook of the fifth commandment, you shall not kill, and ultimately every commandment that God has given us. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org.
Grace, faith, scripture, and Christ alone. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you put off getting an associate's, bachelor's, or MBA? Concordia University St. Louis Center offers a fully accredited Christian liberal arts education. Concordia University, 314-984-8840. Concordia University is located near the intersection of 44 and 270. Professional education with a personal touch. Concordia University, 984-8840.
Jesus did not come to sell stuff. He came as the Savior from sin, as the carrier of crosses. I've often wondered how the Christ might have done if he were asked to be the leader of a contemporary church, a church which measures its success purely and primarily on the basis of money raised and not souls saved.
Pastor Ken Klaus, this week on The Lutheran Hour. Sundays at 12:30 and 5 p.m.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. TV's Family Hour isn't so clean-cut. A Parents Television Council study finds an alarming increase in violence, sex, and profanity during that time slot. Shows between 8 and 9 o'clock are supposed to be safe for family viewing, but the PTC finds in the last 7 years, offensive content has shot up by more than 50%. Steve Jordahl reports.
Your time is up!
Fox led the networks in objectionable content. This episode of 24 showed a man being tortured with an electric drill. Melissa Henson of the Parents Television Council says their study found there was one instance of violent, profane, or sexual content every 4.8 minutes during Family Hour programming.
I guess it should come as a surprise to nobody who has been watching television that Family Hour is no place for children.
The CW was the cleanest network on television, but even it had almost 10 instances of foul content per hour.
The only really, truly clean shows, the shows that were most likely to be free of any kind of offensive content during the Family Hour, were, again, the reality shows and talent competitions.
Overall, questionable content has gone up by 52.4% since the PTC's last study in 2000. Bob Waliszewski of Plugged In Magazine says it's having a damaging effect on society.
I just think it's just an overall coarsening of the culture and just presenting young kids, especially that are watching this stuff, with just such terrible role models.
And after years of the same news, Waliszewski says it's time to take some action.
Nothing seems to be changing except maybe the increase, certainly not the decrease. You know, it may be time for a few of us to write some advertisers of some of these shows, too.
He says they're the only ones who still seem to be listening. For Family News in Focus, I'm Steve Jordahl.
More than 75% of Family Hour programming had foul language. Well over 50% contained sexuality. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Sign on at 7, hit the ground running with the morning show on AM 850 KFUO. Come Friday, we'll head into the weekend with inspiration, information, and compelling Christian conversation on the morning show. Here's a question to consider. Did the Ice Age have anything to do with the biblical flood? We'll talk to Pastor Warren Worth about that on the morning show Friday. Plus, Marty Lindfett with a word of encouragement for you and Pastor Scott Seidler from Concordia Kirkwood appearing on the morning show Friday on AM 850
KFUO. Is there a relationship between creation and salvation? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September is God Made It For You. It's a children's book on the creation story. For more information, find the cover of God Made It For You on our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. God Made It For You is written by Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Charles Lehman. God Made It For You.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about the commandment, you shall not kill, for about the next 10 minutes of the program with Pastor Kent Schaaf. And then we're going to be joined by Roger Worley. He's an NFL Hall of Famer. He was named to the Hall of Fame and then inducted, I think, in August. We're going to talk to him a little bit about the beginning of, well, the official beginning. Preseason's been going on a long time, but a lot of people get depressed in preseason. The official beginning of Rams football here in St. Louis. That's coming up here in about 10 minutes. On Issues Etc. Call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Pastor Schaaf, let's go to the case that you mentioned briefly before, and that is, I'm thinking about the police officer or the soldier who is required in some cases, sometimes with the soldiers, a lot of cases, to take a life in the line of duty. You mentioned before Romans chapter 13. What does that have to do with answering this question?
Well, in Romans 13, you know, we have this idea that Paul speaking about the government, the authorities that God has placed into authority over us, and in a sense that they are the ones who are to govern us, even though we may not always agree with them. They are the ones that are to protect us, and that in some sense, you know, he says, let every soul be subject to the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be ordained of God. Whoever so resists the power resists the ordinance of God, and that resists shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. And I think Romans 13:3 there is a very good explanation for that. That police officers and soldiers are not to go out and just terrorize people who are doing good, who are living according to the law and so forth, but they are to be the ones who protect, who uphold good and peaceful living for us, quiet living for us, by taking care of that which is evil around us. Obviously, with a police officer, he will not draw his gun unless there is a threat either to himself, to other people, and so forth. He won't threaten or draw his gun out on somebody that he is merely pulled over for a parking ticket or for a speeding ticket or anything else like that. It's God using us, our vocations that we have in this sort of way to protect. And sometimes that means that even he brings about this taking of life to protect others, to bring about peace where we live.
So this is, in fact, in at least in that sense that we can discern it according to Romans chapter 13, God is ultimately taking responsibility for the soldier, the police officer, the other people who serve us in this capacity, who must take a life in the line of duty when necessary.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Paul goes on and says that he is a minister of God for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. He is the minister of God. I'm using the old King James because I like some of the terminology here. A revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Paul makes it very clearly here that this is whom he has put into place to do these things. Now, we also need to explain, though, as well, that this obviously can be abused. Police officers can abuse their power. Soldiers can abuse their power and can wrongly take lives or harm others around it. That we've seen that happen as well. But this is where we got into a discussion with our Higher Things gathering, where it was in a sense, what about somebody like Saddam Hussein or Hitler or somebody else like that, who is in power at the time? And we got into the idea, well, they're not necessarily following God's will. They're abusing what God has given to them. They were certainly were not doing good but evil with the power that they had been placed into with things. And therefore, we see what happens with that. It becomes utter chaos.
Ruth is listening in Dallas. Ruth, thank you for waiting. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
You're welcome. A friend of mine was a psychiatric patient at a VA hospital some time ago. He was a World War II veteran, but he had an anxiety disorder and was there and was. He saw the terrible effect that the shallow understanding of this commandment had, particularly on the Vietnam veterans, the younger men who had so many mental problems from having grown up with the thou shalt not kill with no explanation of it, and then going into Vietnam and having to kill. And it had just, he once said the men were out on a walk and they came back and the nurse asked, are you all here? And he jokingly said, well, we're here, but we're not all here.
Hmm.
You know, and that just had a terrible effect on those men, whereas, you know, in a normal circumstance, they would laugh.
Ruth, thank you very much, and thanks for listening in Dallas. Pastor Schaff?
Well, I think that's an excellent point, that this does need to be brought about. And my big fear is, and I thought it was quite interesting that in the break there was a snippet of information there on a little moment where they speak about various things going on in society, about how much violence was on television during the family hour from 8 to 9. And I think Ruth brings up an excellent point that there are problems with people who come back from war who go through this, who maybe have taken a life from of others. And without a proper explanation about this, it can be damaging to a person. But I also think even more so for just somebody who does not go to war but simply turns on their television at night and sees, you know, the violence, the murdering, the bloodshed, and so forth. How many of us have gone or seen a movie where we hope that the villain gets what he deserves, you know, whether he dies or how many times have we come out of a show or a movie and said, oh, did you see the way that person died? And you know, some of the kids kind of were laughing and agreeing with this, but it's also something that we really need to take a step back and look at and say, this isn't something that we should take lightly. This is not something that we should look at, even though it's fictitious on the big screen or the little screen in your house. It's not something when we see or hear about the taking of lives that we should take lightly.
Let's talk about some of those things that, to my mind, are not necessarily debatable in this respect, but to many they are. Abortion. Does it fit under this commandment, you shall not kill?
Well, certainly. I mean, we know as Christians that you know, life begins in the womb, and for a person to take that life is murder, is killing. It's to take the life of our neighbor, whether that be my son or my daughter. You know, a woman who has this child in her room, in her womb, that is her neighbor, and this person has no right to take that life that God has established. And yes, it is a very controversial element out in our society there today, but the idea that God has ordained that this person exists even in the womb, we have no right to take that life. But I think we should, even as Christians around us, we should be the ones who continue to advance the life movement, the life element in our culture, in our society, and in our churches, where we say that we want to befriend and uphold those who are in the womb that have no chance of defending themselves. We need to take on more responsibility with groups like Lutherans for Life or other groups to help defend those in our society that have no chance of defending themselves.
So then a couple things to kind of toss into the bucket along with abortion. Capital punishment, where does it fit?
Well, That's an interesting debate as well. I would tend to think that this is something where again we have to go back to Romans 13. You know, and this is why you have so many different laws. To be honest with you, I've not explored capital punishment too terribly much in this context. But if this is a law that is being brought down upon a person who's committed crimes, then that law, you know, can be upheld. But I think also we need to look at this in many ways and in many aspects. I don't think we should just start executing people left and right. I think there needs to be all of our examinations with this person. You know, how many times have we seen things where criminals have been released, or so-called criminals have been released with DNA evidence and other things like that. In my mind, I don't think we should be so quick to do this. But if it is the law, it is the law.
And then finally, why has ultimately God given us this commandment? The practical, you know, you've talked about this before, the practical, if you will, purpose seems to be to keep us from killing and eating each other with impunity. But why ultimately has God given us the commandment, you shall not kill, Pastor Schaff?
Well, I think ultimately he's given us this commandment. I think everywhere we go, anywhere in the world, people know that it is not right to kill one another. I just got back from Sudan spending a month over there. And even, you know, people over there in a completely different culture know that this is not correct. But I think also, even more so, this commandment is given to us to show us how we are to love our neighbors as ourselves. But ultimately, I think it also shows that what happened to our Savior, Jesus Christ. He was put on the cross by us. You know, as we often hear, we are the ones who crucified Jesus, but yet through his death, he brings us the gift of life. Instead of us being found guilty of this commandment, he brings about that forgiveness to all people. Whether we have killed somebody in our thoughts, our words, or our deeds, whether we have physically murdered somebody, or we've thought about it, or we've harmed our neighbor in any sort of way, this commandment is given to us, obviously, to show us where we have done wrong in our thoughts, words, and deeds. It's the law bringing us to our knees in repentance, showing us that we have committed sins against God and our neighbor, but ultimately that through Christ we are forgiven of the times when we have, as you mentioned about yourself and myself as well, where we find ourselves doing this in a serial fashion.
Pastor Kent Schaff is pastor of All Saints Lutheran Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. He made a presentation at a recent Higher Things Youth Conference titled Murder, Killing, and Bloodshed. Pastor Schaff, thank you very much for being our guest here on Issues Etc.
Thank you very much. It's a joy being with you.
I've been asked many times since the selection if I regret that I had not been selected sooner, as though this were a given or something. The Hall of Fame is never a given. Being nominated over the years has put a sense of hope and what-ifs in my mind, but I never for once took it for granted that I should be or would be here. I consider this a great honor that has come because of the work of a lot of people that touched my life and helped me become the athlete that I did.
That's the voice of Roger Worley. You know, he's a regular listener to this program, but he was also inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame recently. We're going to be talking with him about Rams football for the next few minutes up until the top of the hour here on Issues Etc. You can join us 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us issuesetc@kfuo.org. Roger, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you very much, Todd.
What is it like to be called an NFL Hall of Famer?
Well, it's quite an honor, I'll tell you. It was quite a thrill when I got that call, and obviously the weekend that we spent in Canton during the ceremonies and everything was just a wonderful weekend, and it was just a dream come true. So we had the ability to, you know, the opportunity to take the whole family and a lot of people from church and a lot of friends and family from all over were there to help us celebrate, so it was just a wonderful, wonderful day.
You said dream come true. Did you think seriously, high school, college, then all your times on the pro field, that you would be standing there being inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame someday?
No, not at all. Especially in high school, I didn't even think that I would be playing football in college. I thought I would be playing basketball, and you know, just you look back on the career and how you got from one level to the next, and it's just amazing how God put the right people in the right place to allow me to have a career in football and have a successful career here in St. Louis. And even when I was playing, you know, here in St. Louis, I never really thought about the Hall of Fame. It was just something that, you know, you're just playing year by year and trying to do the best you can. Really, the last few years, when the voting has taken place, and I've come close a couple times, was really probably the most that I thought about it. More recently than when I was playing.
Well, congratulations! I'm sure everybody's happy, and I'm sure that Gail was especially proud. I saw a picture of her in the Lutheran Witness. Look, with some of your grandkids and kids staring on fondly, just like a good NFL wife should, I guess.
Well, it was. It was such, you know, it was a great time in Canton, and the people of Canton and the Hall of Fame people really put on a great weekend for the inductees, and to be able to have, as I said before, the whole family there, the kids and the grandkids, to share that with is just something really special.
Okay, let's talk Rams football a little bit. The season is going to officially begin here. What do the Rams have to do? We always ask this question at the beginning because it's so easy to make these kind of answers. What do the Rams have to do to make the playoffs this year?
Well, you know, I think they have to improve their defense. I think, you know, they're going to have a good offense and they're going to be able to score some points, you know, with their quarterback and their running game and the receivers that they have. You know, they'll be able to do that. The question is, will their defense be able to be good enough and improved enough for them to make the playoffs? And that's the big question. And then even after making the playoffs, move toward the Super Bowl. And that's the big question. And, you know, really nobody has the answer yet until the season gets started. The preseason games in the NFL these days don't really show that much because the veterans hardly play at all. So this week we'll see how they're doing.
I was listening recently, and I don't listen to sports radio except during football season, and I was listening to the kind of chagrin of many of the sports writers in the St. Louis area over the preseason with the Rams, and particularly on that point that, you know, what are we watching? We're watching the third stringers out there. We're not watching the Rams as they will be when the season hits. Is this what preseason is intended to be?
Well, it really is, Todd. Even when I was playing, we had six preseason games, and the preseason was much longer than it is now. But the veterans, even when I played, as I say, we didn't play that much. We played maybe a half in a couple of the games, and just to, you know, get our workout and get our timing. And that's the way it is now. They don't want to risk injuries to the starters, and preseason is a time for the rookies and the younger players to play, and so the coaches can decide who they want to be on the field and who they want to keep on the roster, and that's basically what it is. You know, the players nowadays don't have to go to training camp to get in shape because they work out all season long. So it's not a time to get in shape. It's just basically a time to get ready for the season have a look at the rookies to decide who's going to make the team.
So why do you think the offense has been struggling during the preseason?
Well, they haven't been in there. Jackson hasn't played at all. Bolger's played very sparingly. So, and the offensive line, you know, it's just you have to have when the young guys are in there and they're changing the lineup throughout the preseason, You're just not going to get the consistency and the as you are when the players that have played together and the better players, frankly, are in there.
So, how much do you think that a healthy, ready to go Orlando Pace is going to help this team?
Oh, he's the anchor of that offensive line, and to have a tackle that the quarterback can just depend on his backside there and know that he's not going to get pressure from that side. It's something that you just have to have if you're going to have a winning football team and a good offense. Back in the days in the 70s when we played, of course, we had basically the top offensive line in the league in the mid-70s when they set records, I think, 2 years in a row for fewest sacks with Jim Hart at quarterback, and that's why we were successful, and that's why we won football games back then, and it's the same now. You know, the offensive line, especially when you're a passing game, as Bolger likes to be, and not real mobile, you know, he has to have the protection to be successful.
See, what I'm worried about is that passing game. I remember the Rams of fame, and we're talking about here now 5 or 6 years ago, the Super Bowl Rams, who had a lot of passing, had a lot of fancy offense kind of stuff going on. And I remember at the time, when it worked, it was great, and when it didn't work, it was misery. And then I'm sitting there on Sunday afternoon, supposed to be taking a nap, getting ready for Sunday night, in my bed, telling my wife, why won't they run the ball? Are you worried about that with regard to Bolger at all for this season?
Well, no. I think the Rams now are much more balanced than they were then. I mean, they depended on that passing game with Warner and the receivers and of course Martz. That was his baby, the passing game. And so they're a lot more balanced team now. So I think and that's good for Bulger. You know, when you have the running game that they do and that can dig out the yards on the running plays, that opens up the passing games for him. So I think they'll be I think their offense will be good. You know, it's just, as I said before, how's the defense going to be and can we stop the other team?
Who is going to be the Rams' toughest competition in the NFC West?
Well, Seattle has been there, you know, probably will be tough again. San Francisco has been down the last few years and probably will improve a little bit this year, but I would say probably Seattle and then the Cardinals. The Cardinals should be on the upswing. They've said that for two or three years now, and it hasn't really happened. But this year, they've got a new coach and a new quarterback also. So they're kind of the wild card. You don't know exactly if they're going to gel, and if they do, they could be a strong contender in the league. But going in, I think the Rams have the more veteran team, and so should be a strong contender for the title.
So give us your prediction on Sunday's game against the Panthers.
Oh gosh, it's the Panthers have a good defense, so we'll see. we'll see how that offense works. Hopefully the Rams will win by six or seven points.
You need to straighten something out for me, Roger, because I have heard. See, I know you. You're a very gentle and kind and kind of soft spoken guy, but I've heard that when you were on the field, you scared people. I don't know if they called you the intimidator, but I've heard from people that you were incredibly intimidating on the field. And it's hard for me to reconcile those two things. Have you just mellowed with age? Is that what's happened?
Well, I don't think I was an intimidator, but you do have to take on a different personality when you're on the football field. There's no doubt about that. As the week would progress, as we came closer to game time, I think I started to get a little more of a loner on Saturday, maybe with my family, and kind of get into that game mode, especially on Saturday evening and Sunday, getting ready for the games. You have to have a little a little meanness in you, I think, to play the game of football and be successful, but. And not in a mean way, I don't mean it that way, but just, a very intense football, you know.
Well, Roger, congratulations again on the Hall of Fame induction, and our best to Gail and to the family. Thanks for being our guest.
Well, thank you very much.
NFL Hall of Famer, and I imagine he never gets tired of hearing that, Roger Worley. Well, the season starts tonight with the Indiana Colts hosting the New Orleans Saints, and then Sunday at noon, it's Rams football. They're going to be hosting the Carolina Panthers. I'm sure Roger will be watching with kind of a renewed sense of excitement now that he has laurels upon which he may rest. When we come back from this break, we have got the third hour of Issues Etc. straight ahead. Pastor David Bala is going to be our guest. We're going to talk about body image, and sometimes it becomes body idolatry. And then in the last half hour of the program, we'll be talking about Christian funerals with Pastor Jonathan Watt. Stay tuned.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.